We need you back. Roger spends the next week in a state of numbed shock. His apartment here is like a small hotel room. A hotel with security, air conditioning, and windows that only open onto an interior atrium. He pays little attention to his surroundings. It's not as if he has a home to return to. Roger stops shaving, stops changing his socks, stops looking in mirrors or combing his hair. He smokes a lot, orders cheap bourbon from the commissary, and drinks himself into an amnesic stupor each night. He is, frankly, a mess. Self-destructive. Everything disintegrated under him at once. His job, the people he held in high regard, his family, his life. All the time he can't get one thing out of his head. The expression on Gorman's face as he stands there in front of the submarine, rotting from the inside out with radiation sickness, dead and not yet knowing it. It's why he stopped looking in mirrors. On the fourth day, he slumped in a chair watching taped I Love Lucy reruns on the boob tube when the door to his suite opens quietly. Someone comes in. He doesn't look round until the colonel walks across the screen and unplugs the TV set at the wall, then sits down in the chair next to him. The colonel has bags of dark skin under his eyes. His jacket is rumpled, and his collar is unbuttoned.
"You've got to stop this, Roger," he says quietly. "You look like shit."
"Yeah, well, you too." The colonel passes him a slim manila folder. Without wanting to, Roger slides out the single sheet of paper within.
"So it was them."
"Yeah."
A moment's silence.
"For what it's worth, we haven't lost yet. We may yet pull your wife and son out alive, or be able to go back home."
"Your family too, I suppose."
Roger's touched by the colonel's consideration, the pious hope that Andrea and Jason will be all right, even through his shell of misery. He realizes his glass is empty. Instead of refilling it, he puts it down on the carpet beside his feet.
"Why?"
The colonel removes the sheet of paper from his numb fingers.
"Probably someone spotted you in the King David and traced you back to us. The Mukhabarat had agents everywhere, and if they were in league with the KGB...
He shrugs.
"Things escalated rapidly. Then the president cracked that joke over a hot mic that was supposed to be switched off. Have you been checking in with the desk summaries this week?"
Roger looks at him blankly.
"Should I?" "Oh, things are still happening."
The colonel leans back and stretches his feet out.
"From what we can tell of the situation on the other side, not everyone's dead yet. Ligachev's screaming blue murder over the hotline, accusing us of genocide. But he's still talking. Europe is a mess, and nobody knows what's going on in the Middle East. Even the Blackbirds aren't making it back out again."
"The thing at Tikrit."
"Yeah. It's bad news, Roger. We need you back."
"Bad news?"
"The worst."
The colonel jams his hands between his knees, stares at the floor like a bashful child.
"Saddam Hussein al-Tikriti spent years trying to get his hands on Elder technology. It looks like he finally succeeded in stabilizing the gate into Sototh. Whole villages disappeared. Marsh Arabs, wiped out in the swamps of eastern Iraq. Reports of yellow rain, people's skin melting right off their bones. The Iranians got itchy and finally went nuclear. Trouble is, they did so 2 hours before that speech. Some asshole in Plotsk launched half the Uralskaya SS-20 grid. They went to launch on warning 8 months ago. Burning south, praise Jesus. Scratch the Middle East, period. Everything from the Nile to the Khyber Pass is toast. We're still waiting for the callback on Moscow, but SAC has put the whole peacemaker force on airborne alert. So far, we've lost the eastern seaboard as far south as northern Virginia, and they've lost the Donbass Basin and Vladivostok. Things are a mess. Nobody can even agree whether we're fighting the commies or something else. But the box at Chernobyl, Project Kostche, the doors are open, Roger. We orbited a keyhole 11 over it, and there are tracks leading west. The Pluto strike didn't stop it, and nobody knows what the fuck is going on in Warpack country, or France, or Germany, or Japan, or England.
The colonel makes a grab for Roger's wild turkey, rubs the neck clean, and swallows from the bottle. He looks at Roger with a wild expression on his face.
"Kostche is loose, Roger. They fucking woke the thing, and now they can't control it. Can you believe that?"
"I can believe that."
"I want you back behind a desk tomorrow morning, Roger. We need to know what this Thulu creature is capable of. We need to know what to do to stop it. Forget Arrak. Arrak is a smoking hole in the map. But K'Thulu is heading toward the Atlantic coast. What are we going to do if it doesn't stop?
Masada. The city of XK Masada sprouts like a vast mushroom, a mile-wide dome emerging from the top of a cold plateau on a dry planet that orbits a dying star. The jagged black shapes of F-117s howl across the empty skies outside it at dusk and dawn, patrolling the threatening emptiness that stretches as far as the mind can imagine. Shadows move in the streets of the city, hollowed-out human shells in uniform. They rustle around the feet of the towering concrete blocks like the dry leaves of autumn, obsessively focused on the tasks that lend structure to their remaining days. Above them tower masts of steel, propping up the huge geodesic dome that arches across the sky, blocking out the hostile alien constellations, protecting frail humanity from the dust storms that periodically scour the bones of the ancient world. The gravity here is a little lighter. The night sky, whorled and marbled by the diaphanous sheets of gas, blasted off the dying star that lights their days. During the long winter nights, a flurry of carbon dioxide snow dusts the surface of the dome, but the air is bone dry, the city slaking its thirst on subterranean aquifers. This planet was once alive. There is still a scummy sea of algae near the equator that feeds oxygen into the atmosphere, and there is a range of volcanoes near the North Pole that speaks of plate tectonics in motion. But it is visibly dying. There is a lot of history here, but no future. Sometimes, in the early hours when he cannot sleep, Roger walks outside the city, along the edge of the dry plateau. Machines labor on behind him, keeping the city tenuously intact. He pays them little attention. There is talk of mounting an expedition to Earth one of these years, to salvage whatever is left before the searing winds of time erase it forever. Roger doesn't like to think about that. He tries to avoid thinking about Earth as much as possible, except when he cannot sleep, but walks along the clifftop, prodding at memories of Andrea and Jason, and his parents, and sister, and relatives, and friends, each of them as painful as the socket of a missing tooth. He has a mouthful of emptiness, bitter and aching, out here on the edge of the plateau. Sometimes Roger thinks he's the last human being alive. He works in an office, feverishly trying to sort out what went wrong, and bodies move around him, talking, eating in the canteen, sometimes talking to him and waiting as if they expect a dialogue. There are bodies here, men and some women chatting, civilian and some military, but no people. One of the bodies, an army surgeon, told him he's suffering from a common stress disorder, survivor's guilt. This may be so, Roger admits, but it doesn't change anything. Soulless days follow sleepless nights into oblivion, dust trickling over the side of the cliff like sand into the undug graves of his family. A narrow path runs along the side of the plateau, just downhill from the foundations of the city power plant, where huge apertures belch air warmed by the radiators of the nuclear reactor. Roger follows the path, gravel and sandy rock crunching under his worn shoes. Foreign stars twinkle overhead, forming unrecognizable patterns that tell him he's far from home. The trail drops away from the top of the plateau, until the city is an unseen shadow looming above and behind his shoulder. To his right is a dizzying panorama, the huge rift valley with its ancient city of the dead stretched out before him. Beyond it rise alien mountains, their peaks as high and airless as the dead volcanoes of Mars. About half a mile away from the dome, the trail circles an outcrop of rock and takes a downhill switchback turn. Roger stops at the bend and looks out across the desert at his feet. He sits down, leans against the rough cliff face, and stretches his legs out across the path, so that his feet dangle over nothingness. Far below him, the dead valley is furrowed with rectangular depressions. Once, millions of years ago, they might have been fields, but nothing like that survives to this date. They're just dead, like everyone else on this world. Like Roger. In his shirt pocket, a crumpled, precious pack of cigarettes. He pulls a white cylinder out with shaking fingers, sniffs at it, then flicks his lighter under it. Scarcity has forced him to cut back. He coughs at the first lungful of stale smoke, a harsh, racking croak. The irony of being saved from lung cancer by a world war is not lost on him. He blows smoke out, a tenuous trail streaming across the cliff. "Why me?" he asks quietly. The emptiness takes its time answering. When it does, it speaks with the colonel's voice.
You know the reason.
I didn't want to do it, he hears himself saying. I didn't want to leave them behind.
The void laughs at him. There are miles of empty air beneath his dangling feet.
You had no choice.
Yes, I did. I didn't have to come here.
He pauses.
I didn't have to do anything, he says quietly,
and inhales another lungful of death.
It was all automatic. Maybe it was inevitable.
Evitable, echoes the distant horizon. Something dark and angular skims across the stars, like an echo of extinct pterosaurs. Turbofans whirring within its belly, the F-117 hunts on, patrolling to keep at bay the ancient evil, unaware that the battle is already lost.
Your family could still be alive, you know.
He looks up.
They could?
Andrea? Jason?
Alive?
The void laughs again, unfriendly.
There is life eternal within the Eater of Souls. Nobody is ever forgotten or allowed to rest in peace. They populate the simulation spaces of its mind, exploring all the possible alternative endings to their lives. There is a fate worse than death, you know.
Roger looks at his cigarette disbelievingly, throws it far out into the night sky above the plane. He watches it fall until its ember is no longer visible. Then he gets up. For a long moment, he stands poised on the edge of the cliff, nerving himself and thinking. Then he takes a step back, turns, and slowly makes his way back up the trail toward the redoubt on the plateau. If his analysis of the situation is wrong, at least he is still alive. And if he is right, dying would be no escape. He wonders why hell is so cold at this time of year.